Welcome to Latchkey Urchins and Friends podcast. I'm Allison Sibula.
And I'm Anne Sherry. We are healing trauma with humor, humility, authenticity, imperfection, messiness, and compassion.
Each week, we interview someone on a different childhood trauma and neglect topic. Our hope is to reduce the stigma of talking about mental health and offer some tools to heal.
Latchkey kids are children who came home to an empty house after school each day and watched themselves. We are the children who fought viciously with our siblings. We set our toasters on fire making cinnamon toast and aimlessly roamed the neighborhood hoping for something to do.
Urchins adapted to not need anyone. Our spiny, prickly parts keep people at a distance.
Sometimes we were the kids other kids' parents warned you about.
Sometimes we were the kids who held it all together, saved our families, and got perfect grades in school.
Sometimes we were the kids who were comforted by drugs and alcohol.
Sometimes we were the adults who grew up not realizing what we didn't get.
Whether you're a latchkey, an urchin, or a friend,
you are wanted here. All right, welcome. So today we're doing a special episode where we're not doing our regular intro and we don't have a guest, but we're going to talk all things therapy.
Yes.
So how to find a therapist, what brings people to therapy, what to look for, what the work is.
Yes.
And many of our listeners have therapists, are therapists.
Yes.
And you may disagree with our opinions.
This will be a guideline for today, where we are today around it. And I'm already like feeling nervous because I'm like, oh shit, I am a therapist, so I should know this topic inside and out. So we'll do. I'm here to do my best. Yes.
I mean, the purpose of this episode is just that we know that people are listening to our episodes about healing, but there's not everyone has had therapy or has gone to therapy or knows what to look for, how to get one, or what good therapy is, or why anyone would want to go. So we're just going to try our best to answer some of those questions to make sure that
yes,
we have this resource for our listeners, for all of you, in case this is something that you need.
Yes.
We just know that it's a need. So yes, we're just going to try our best. I guess I want to say, like, for me, it's always been easy to reach out and say, you know what, I need help, because yeah, that's the kind of parenting that I was raised with. My parents started going to therapy when I was 7, once they got a divorce. And then they took my brother and I to a therapist one time. And so I wasn't one of those kids that always saw a therapist, but actually we had this great program in elementary school for children of divorced parents called Banana Splits.
No way.
And, yeah, once a week we would go sit in a little room with a therapist and other kids whose parents were going through a divorce, and we would like draw pictures and process our grief.
Oh, yay. I swear it is getting better. I know a lot feels like it's getting worse, yeah, but I look at it as you never would have gone to I think I only wound up in therapy because I happened to make my way to University of Colorado in Boulder, and that, you know, but I was probably 25. I definitely needed a therapist way before then, way, way, way. And then a older friend, sort of a mentor type, was like, you need to see somebody. And I trusted that person. And I remember I actually did call my mom and tell her I was going to start seeing a therapist. And she was like, why? You know, it was just not even on her. It just wasn't in their radar, in their, even though my brother by that time had probably wrecked numerous cars, had been expelled from school, sent to military school.
Just different generation.
Yes.
Though, because yes, 'cause your parents are my grandparents' age.
That's right.
And my grandparents, it's not on the, there's no way.
No, they would never. You wouldn't have time for that. I mean, they would never. Yeah. Yeah. And therapy just keeps getting better and better, actually. So it does. Like, we know more about ACEs. We just know more. When I started, I don't know.
ACEs stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences. So yeah. I think I'll start with my, we're going to each share a little bit about our therapy journey. And Anne is so much a part of my therapy journey that I'm just going to start today. So, you know, I did have parents who modeled that for me. So that was, so when I was in college, I started off, I went as a freshman to UC Berkeley, but I had to drop out my sophomore year because I realized that I couldn't stop using hard drugs, cocaine, methamphetamine, et cetera, other fun, never got into the heroin, but other, just used almost everything else, probably like 20 different fun things, to be honest. Oh, but I want to throw this out there. The reason I never tried heroin is because my mom sat me down as a teenager and was like, this is a drug you won't be able to stop using. Do not try this. It's going to feel too good. And that just stuck with me and I didn't try it. So talk to your kids about drugs. I'm just throwing that out there.
And maybe all the drugs, because your mom singled out heroin, but not the other ones. So that's interesting.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just certain, I think it's just what you know about. Do you know what I mean? So yes. Someone had talked to her about that one knew to talk to me about it. It's just parents can only do so much, but it was helpful. Yes. It was very helpful. That just stuck with me. But so once I was in college and realized like, oh no, I can't really stop. It was like very natural for my brain to go, I probably need help. And I know that that's really hard for a lot of people who didn't have the kind of parenting where their parents modeled that for them of like, you know what? Yeah. I think I'm gonna need help with this. I don't think I can do this on my own. And I want to say like most people weren't modeled that.
No, I mean, a hallmark of the Gen X is you don't need any help, which is reinforced by the American bootstrap sort of, you know, it would have been very, very strange to get therapy. It feels like in the 70s. I'm sure people were doing it, but en masse, that just wasn't, it just wasn't talked about.
There were a few pop psychology books starting to happen, like
I'm Okay, You're Okay.
I'm Okay, You're Okay.
I know. Tom has a funny story that he looked at it as a kid and it said, IMOC, You're Okay. And he was, for the longest time, he wondered who IMOC was and why IMOC needed to be told he was okay. So, yeah.
Oh, IMOC.
Okay. IMOC. You're okay.
So, so luckily, because my parents modeled that for me, I just was like, I need help. And so, unfortunately, universities weren't. I think they're getting better, but at the time, it was like, sorry, we only help people like when a parent dies or something. They're like, we don't, you know. So they had like support groups for people. And I would go to these support groups, but they weren't really that useful to me. And like they were kind of like, I don't know, we can kind of help you find a therapist, but not really. Here's a sheet of people to call. So it was like not that good.
Yes.
So this is where Anne comes in and saves the day. I mean, or wait, before that, I did do a rehab program. They were like, if you want to come back to Berkeley to do rehab. And I just did like the free public San Luis Obispo drug and alcohol program. And it was really awesome for me. And my therapist, Donna, was someone that had lived experience. Like she had also been an addict.
Yeah.
She was a student in training and she was an older student. She was amazing. And she like saved my life. What I loved about Donna that you do, Anne, is that Donna would just look at me and be like, I trust you.
Yes. Yeah.
And that is just like, thank you for that gift.
Yes.
I just needed it.
Yeah. I do remember kind of the early therapy, I don't know, tenets or something was like getting away from the therapist as this major expert and they hold some key that you just have to unlock and figure out. Like therapy more now is, no, you got a lot of wisdom in you and we are just like kind of trying to help you unlock that. Like
exactly.
And it's a long path to being able to trust, but for a therapist to just keep giving it back to you, like, what are you?
So healing.
Yeah. What do you think?
So that was really helpful. But then I moved to Asheville and I moved in with Anne and you had
I was going to therapy school.
Which was great. And so you helped me find my therapist that I had in Asheville.
Yes.
Susan.
Yes. I think I invited her to like our podcast at Facebook page.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So hi, Susan. Hopefully you're listening.
Hi, Susan. So the thing about that was like, She was great because she was, this was like 2005. So this was like before mindfulness went big. You know what I mean? It hadn't gone mainstream yet.
Yeah.
And, but she was bringing that in with the Hakomi style therapy. But the thing was, like, I had so much work to do. Like, I'm even just like tearing up thinking about where I was at, you know, as a 20-year-old. I was a disaster.
Yeah.
And so Susan would just, she would just try to like be like, well, you know, maybe that mindset isn't working, but it there it I don't there was
no a, I she just sometimes did the best I could. my 30s clients that come in, I'm like, you're right on time. Like 20s are hard. 20s, it's like you don't even often you don't know what your blind spots are until the losses have added up enough, you know?
And then Neil Strauss.
Yes.
Yeah, Neil Strauss, who wrote The Game, who I was like in this mentoring circle with him, and he's awesome. He would say, just think of it like you escaped a cult, like your family. Your family is the cult that you just escaped.
Yes.
You have to think of it that way because you're like, and you may not throw everything out. Some of the stuff that you learn from your parents is really good. Like my parents taught me to ask for help.
Yeah.
But the rest of it, man, you got to dig in there and just see how they brainwashed you and get rid of that stuff. Chuck it.
Yes. I think I had a mentor one time say, I don't know if you remember those biodomes, you know, where you're living in this kind of, do you remember that? Like you,
that was a 90s thing.
Yeah. Like you go and live in this biodome and it's kind of like therapy is coming out of the biodome into this land and you really have to discover what that land is. So like just so much curiosity of like, it's your curiosity is your friend. Why would I act that way? Why would I say that? Why? Like for me, like my next level is like, why are communities so hard for me? Which is what I've just written about. Like I didn't know how effed up and broken I was until I started joining communities. Like I was like, I'm good. I've been in therapy for like 30 years. I'm like, great. I probably have a lot to offer this community. And it is insane how much crap I feel trying to belong in communities. So goes on and on.
Leaving the biodome.
Leaving the biodome. It's scary. You're going to keep running back into that biodome. You're going to get in relationships that mirror. Anyway, relationship therapy is a whole, that's a whole nother episode. That's a whole book, right? Many, many books. Yeah.
So
go ahead. You came to my biodome.
I want to wrap up my summary of my therapy journey so that, Anne, you could talk about yours. So really quickly. So then my 20s was a shit show. Like, I think your 20s just have to be, like you just said. They're just, it's just wild. Whatever you're programming, you're just out there, like, running your programming.
Do your best. Don't beat yourself up so much. Yeah.
It was gnarly, though. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then when I was 31, I moved to Austin, Texas, and I was just doing this toxic positivity thing, which listened to our toxic positivity episode because I talk about that. Mm-hmm. And then when I was traveling in Iceland, I got sexually assaulted by my Airbnb host. And that was a big trigger for me to leave the biodome of my brainwashing because suddenly it's like I couldn't keep running anymore. Like life intervened and was like, you will stop running now.
Yeah.
And I got back from that trip and just thought there's something else is here. Something I reached out to a therapist in Austin and I just was like, I got attacked, but something is coming up for me. And I don't think it's just about this. I think there's something else in there.
Well,
and I was just touching the surface of my child sexual abuse. Like, just like, I think it's touching this, but I didn't know what that, I just didn't know. And so I went to her office and she read me that list of the criteria for childhood emotional neglect from running on empty.
Yeah.
And,
I talk about this
in the episode about, yeah, exactly. It was just like, check, 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 check. Then I read that book. Then I had to check myself in a psych hospital, which we talk about in episode 20. Listen to that one. Then I realized that that therapist wasn't for me, and I want to talk about why that was. Because she felt a little cold to me. I think she probably wasn't a great therapist.
Yes.
But luckily I had the intuition to go, because my mom is – different people. I'm a colder person. There's mm-hmm. different people that are warm, that are cold. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I just knew for my nervous system that because my mom tends to be a colder type person, that I wanted to find the warmest therapist possible that yeah. my nervous system needed that in that moment.
Yeah.
So I found this amazing woman named Pat. And I interviewed her. I was like, well, why should I work with you? And she had just some great stories about her own recovery and her own personal journey. And that I felt really comfortable. And she was just so different from my mom. She just was not like my mom. And I really needed that. And she just really helped me see so much, helped me heal so much, offered that safe space. I would just start crying on my way to her office. And I went every week. And just cried about all the stuff and really finally for the first time saw all my shit. And I think for me personally, it was really important that my therapist be really warm and really well read. I tend to not work well with therapists who don't read books because I'm always reading books, as you know, like a million of them. So I can't go to my therapist and say, you know, this book, da da da, and they don't know what I'm talking about. Like, that's not healing for me.
Yeah.
So I just want to throw that out there as like my personal story hopefully will inspire you to help you find the right therapist for you.
Yeah.
That those things – because then I've had a couple therapists since then that just didn't work that well for me. They didn't really read. They weren't really up to date on new terminology. They just wanted to talk about my week. They didn't dig in there. And so what Pat would do with me is every time that I would start to just talk and ramble and da-da-da, and she would be like, can we slow that down? I noticed that when you said this, you started, something came up for you. Can we explore that? Mm-hmm. And having that therapist that would slow me down, notice the sticky spots in the conversation, ask me about those, help me feel my feelings was so healing because otherwise I was just dissociating and just blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
Like what she talks about and what my bones know.
So that might be what you need at some point. Therapists that will say, hey, I noticed a part of you is really talking a lot. Is there anything else that's going on? You know, which is, it's definitely tricky. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's like a very short summary of my therapist journey. So personally. Yes. So Anne, what's yours?
Well, so long, 30 years of on again, off again therapy, becoming a therapist, lots of, trainings. I went the body centered route, the somatic route, way back in the 80s. And actually,
why?
That's what was available. My mentor person was actually good friends with Pat Ogden, who's kind of famous with. So that was my first therapist for 4 months. I wasn't that discerning. I was like, I trust this person. This person seems really competent. Obviously she is. Because I could go so many places with this, but something that you said, I too needed just deep nurturing. A lot of times I didn't know what was going on. I didn't really have a sense of myself. And so by being invited into, well, what's your body saying? I like something about that. I didn't really know there was another type of therapy, actually. It's the only one I knew. Just what I showed up to. It's where I landed. It's what I practiced.
And it felt good. It felt kept going back.
Good. Yes. Yes. And so that was it. What I do have appreciation for. I mean, it's really why I became a therapist, because the first person after that, the next person after that, her name was Manuela in San Francisco. It was kind of like, I was like, are you my mother? Are you my mother? It was like the first time I felt seen, heard, understood. And I was like, well, that's what I'm supposed to do. So on sometimes I'll even be like, was I even supposed to be a therapist? It just somewhere inside my system made the decision. That's the best I've ever felt in my life. So I'm going to do that. I want to be that. I want to own that. I want that.
I love that.
I know. It is working out. I really that love being a therapist. Yeah,
like it was sharing that story. I'm hearing incredible warmth and love from you.
Aw.
And that feels really so good to hear.
Yeah, thanks. And then I like went into trainings. I literally wanted to be her. So I'm like, well, what are you? And then I did the same training that she did. And so I needed to, and she was the trainer, and I moved to another therapist, which was kind of sad, but I kind of went stoic about it and was like, okay, well, I guess this is, you know, I didn't lobby for, can we still be in this? You know, it was new to me to be like, I have to go away to become you. I have to go away from you to become you. But still, it's just really, I think the biggest thing here for me, nurture were my therapists. And I would often show up and I was like, I don't know what just happened, but I came in, started crying, and I feel better. And so it was just, it's almost like they were just wiping off like layers and layers of.
That's exactly it.
Tenseness. I hate you. I hate everybody. I hate life. I hate everything. And I was like, oh, just tense. And they would like kind of mother me for a while. And then I would cry. And then I would feel better. And so there may be faster ways to do this, but that's what seemed to work. I really don't think there are, actually. Then I've gone into places of looking for like, what's the prescription so that I don't have to feel a ton. I'm like, ooh, EMDR, let's do EMDR. Ooh, let's do this type of therapy. Let's do this. Then I'll get well really quickly. And I'm telling you what this book with Stephanie Fu that we go on and on about, I have really come to terms with
what my bones know.
My neglect qualifies as complex PTSD.
Yep.
And there really isn't a destination of healing. It's just, I just keep building.
There's no shortcut.
No shortcut. It's my favorite word now is capacity. We're just building capacity to be with everything that comes up.
Can you unpack that a little bit? What does that mean?
It's kind of making, creating spaces like so that what'll happen, I think, when a trauma or a trigger happens, it takes up every single bit of space in your system, and it's all you see, right? And so you have to kind of you have to ask it or coax it or be with it or breathe with it so it will shrink enough so that it can actually feel all the work you're doing. Like 20 years of somebody saying, I see you. You can cry here. I got you. Like that's in there, but the trauma, I don't know if it ever will know that. But what I can do is meet it quicker. These days I know what's happening and I can be with it. I can get to it quicker, like within maybe 30 minutes or an hour, although maybe a day. But I used to live in flashbacks for years.
Yes.
I would stay
without realizing it.
No.
Zombie. My analogy is zombie. I was a zombie.
Yeah.
I was just walking through my life like a zombie.
Completely.
I just had no awareness that I was having a trauma response, that this was making me push people away. It was making me angry.
Yeah.
I
drank for a long time. It was social, but it was every day and it became more and more. And I was like, oh, drinking has now, I have caught, it has become, it has become a way to cope with all of that. And it was
because drinking kind of helps you. I think drinking helps you access some of the feeling stuff.
It does.
If I would cry with friends, all of a sudden I can talk. Yep.
Connect without the anxiety. I had no idea how anxious I was. I am still.
Absolutely.
Yes, I mask well. So that's sort of personal journey.
So how does that bring you up to today? Is that anything else you want to share from your journey? Because I know there's
I'm working. Well, and I've said if you're joining today, you may not have heard this, but I am an internal family systems therapist. We speak about it quite a bit through this podcast. That's the type of therapy that has worked the best. It's what I practice. It's who I'm working with now. What I love about the person I'm working with now, it feels a little more, adult isn't the right word, but I'm like, I don't know, some of this capacity maybe I was talking about, the work I'm doing with her feels a little, it feels deeper. And it just feels developmentally appropriate. Like, I'm moving into my 50s. Because
you've already gone through the phases where you've been seen.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of connection inside. But what's so interesting is I'm getting to way deeper hurts, way more sensitive parts, like what we call exiles, which have been, or little protectors that help me manage the overwhelm of neglect. Like, I'm meeting them for the first time in a new way. Often people will be like, I've already worked on this stuff. You make a show up to therapy and be like, I've worked on this stuff. There's hundreds of poems out there and wisdom that say, no, you're just going to keep coming and circling. Like, if your original trauma, which mine is just this neglect, I just keep digging in that area, you know, like, and I'm just meeting in order to, it feels like to me, in order to keep being big in this world, almost equal and opposite reactions. One of those, like, there's some law, physics law or something. The bigger that you become, you better go, you don't better, but what's happening for me is I have to go and look at deeper stuff. The more that I expand, it's almost like there's an equal and opposite reaction into something that's pretty hurt. And that's, I think if you grow up pretty securely attached, I don't think you're on that path. And I'm coming to this.
Who are those people?
Who are you? Who
tell
are
us,
you?
If you grew up securely attached, you're probably not listening to our podcast.
So anyways, it just feels like it's just a journey that goes. I think I'm finally getting to the place of accepting, oh, I just keep showing up. Just keep going. You're doing fine. You're doing all right. And that is that capacity to meet what doesn't, what feels edgy, what feels tense. It's like, this is something. I just don't live in those spaces, right? I don't live in them. I meet them, I think.
Well, so this is a good transition to our next point, which is why might a person seek a therapist? And if you're listening and you're like, maybe I want one, I don't know, or maybe I want a better one or a better one for you.
Yes.
I think it's like, you know how they say there's like a lid for every pot in terms of,
I've had people come meet, you know. Yeah, I'm a therapist. People have met me and they're like, doesn't feel like a good fit. I'm like, probably not.
That's great though, yes, for both of you. You totally don't want to work with someone that's not a good fit, neither do they.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we will talk about that. But first, the kinds of things that bring someone to therapy. So I'll share a little bit about, you know, for me, relationships are a big one. You know, like my first major boyfriend, he and I would just fight all the time, verbally. Mm-hmm. Just all the time. And I didn't know that we were, quote, triggered or that trauma was coming up or whatever. And so he actually, I was seeing Susan and he started seeing Vijay, Connie, our guest from episode 4, Connie's husband.
Yep.
And that was awesome. And so that was my first exposure to trauma, that trauma is coming up in your fights. Mm-hmm. Because we both, as a result of him working with Vijay, we both read a book by John Lee called Growing Yourself Back Up that talks about, you know, if you're having an argument about how come you always come home late from work and it's blowing up and you can't talk about it in a sane way, something else is going on for you, which for me, because that was a fight, was like my mom would do that. You know, she didn't want to see it. She wasn't excited to see us after she got off work. She would work late. She would forget to pick us up from after school program. And so it was this old wound. So we were having these explosive fights and I was like, what is happening? Why is this hurting so much?
Right.
And it's like, well, because your mom, hello, that hurt.
Yeah.
You know, and you want, and so now you're wanting your partner to show up in a way that heals that wound.
Yes.
So the kinds of things that bring people to therapy are often relational.
Yeah.
Why am I fighting with my partner? Or why am I not fighting with my partner?
Yes.
Like having fights are important too. Like there's like a balance. Right. Like you want to, why does it feel so empty?
Yes.
Like why aren't we talking?
Yes. That's right.
Or your coworkers or your boss. Like for me, it's like, another thing that took me to therapy was like, how come I can't keep a job?
It's not Tom has a saying, like, it's not a problem until it's a pattern, you know? So when you see a pattern of losses or this is where the curiosity piece, and Claudia alludes to this like, and Stephanie does, this unflinching curiosity of like, what is going on here? Rather than like out the, what the fuck is this? I love that. I say that. That yes, has helped grow too, my capacity Claudia. So much. Cause I'm like, what is this? You know?
What is
yeah,
this?
Yeah.
What the fuck yes, is this?
Yes.
If you are saying that in any area of your life, yeah. why can't I follow through? Why can't yes. I keep a job? Why can't I talk to my partner? Why is this hurting? Why do I feel numb? Why?
Lots of comparing too. There's a phrase, to compare is to despair. But if you find yourself chronically comparing, like, why don't I have that? Why don't I, you know, it's like, I there's just critics. That could be
critics. A good question to ask.
Yes. Yeah. Just, and not, yeah. And not be needing a therapist. Like, why don't I have what I want? Maybe that's a coaching road. Who knows?
I think it's a really good question to ask. And of course, mm-hmm. some of these things are like societal level. Like for us millennials, 100%. We didn't get to do the thing that boomers and Gen X did, where we like got the house and the job and the career and the partner. Like none of us are doing that. And yeah. I think it's really important that therapy be contextual in that way.
Yes,
but agreed. Also, if you always have money problems and you can't seem to get a grip on your finances, that's a great reason to go to therapy. That's a great reason to go to therapy.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I used to teach this coaching program that helped people quit sugar. That's another great reason to go to therapy. If you can't, you know, if you yes. just can't get a handle and you just yes. always feel like, but why am I always eating when I don't want to or not eating when I need to? That's another great reason to go. And we would do this program where we would look at your relationship with sugar, because that was one for me. And it was, the whole point of the program was just to build an emotional foundation
yes.
to feel your feelings instead of eating your feelings.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's the same with if you're overspending.
Yeah.
How come you're spending your feelings right. instead of feeling right. your feelings? You know,
well, that was it. Claudia talked about that too. Don't treat the symptoms often. You may start there, but once these things that
it's
are
not really about the sugar.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Then you start feeling stuff. And that can be overwhelming. So don't sit with the overwhelm. Don't pick up a new addiction. Go to a therapist and try to get curious.
Or pick yes. an addiction that is safer.
Right.
Like I remember reading an influencer once that she's like, my mental health thing is if I'm feeling triggered, I just go to the dollar store and buy something that's like $2.
Yes.
Like that yes. is an addiction that might work yes. for you. Do yes. you know what I mean? If you yeah. just need to go buy a $2 thing so that you don't buy a $200 thing, yes. do that.
Yes. Yes. That's true. Yeah. Go to yoga.
What are some other things that bring,
yeah.
like what brings clients to your door? What's their tipping point?
Usually relationship. Mm-hmm. Grief, things that seem out of proportion. Maybe a grief has occurred and they just can't seem to get over it. Because often, like you had talked about the sexual assault, this is complex grief where it pretty much opens a doorway to all the unresolved grief. So it seems outsized, you know, and yes. people are like, why yes, can't you exactly. do this? And, you know, you're doing all the things and it doesn't seem to be
it's just not
taking.
Working.
Yes. Let's see what else. Just life transitions. Don't be afraid to have somebody help you with some life transitions. Aww, like my kids have left that. The house. Like we've been taught in this stupid this part of American culture. Like you should be able to know this. You know, your friends are fine doing it. Why not get some assistance with like your kids have left the house? Right? You're empty nesting. Maybe it's like you didn't realize stuff that you had you've been a parent for so long and then you don't have a purpose, or maybe you didn't nourish certain purposes. Let somebody help you do that. Therapy can be, it doesn't have to be this like 30 year, I didn't go straight for 30 years. I'm a big proponent of taking breaks too, letting the work Absolutely. Work. So yeah. Life transitions, trauma, all the traumas.
Yeah. I love that, life yeah. transitions.
Yeah.
So now we're going to talk about how to even find a therapist. And then we'll talk about what should be the goal? What's the outcome?
Right.
What are you going to get out of it?
Yeah.
So how to find a therapist. So I'm actually going to post in the show notes. I made a video a couple years ago about how to use the website Psychology Today to find a therapist, which is one way that you could find a therapist. So I'm going to post on the show notes. Anne, for example, is a therapist that's not on Psychology Today because you're usually full. You use word of mouth referral.
Yes, at this point. And just how I was connected in the community and just decisions I've made on life balance, I am pretty full. So, but one thing.
And that's a sticking point. I just want to acknowledge that for our listeners is like, I am so sorry that it's so hard to find a therapist. Jesus H. Christ.
It is, but don't entirely, buy that. You're just not going to find
that. Though.
I do want to hold space for that, but keep going, you know, cause if you just keep going some ways, one thing I was, talking to you about in Asheville, and I'm sure many communities have this. There is a professional Facebook group. It probably has 1,500 members on it. Anytime somebody says, I need a therapist, or I don't know, I'm looking for this particular thing, I just post that to that group. And I get like 10 responses, 5 responses. I've got
What's
space.
The group called though for people who are like literally, how do I find this group? What are these groups called?
Well, it's really the professional group. So what I would say, you have to I would say, ask your friends. Don't be afraid to say, I'm looking for a therapist. It's not shameful. And maybe people
that
do
is
that
the
now.
Biggest thing.
But ask
that
people,
is the biggest
who
thing.
Do you see? Do they have openings? You know, could you ask your therapist? Like ask, we talked about this in community a little bit, be a burden, push a little bit and just say, could you like keep at it? Like some, and I know that may be something you want to work on in therapy, like being assertive. But you are, I mean, we know this, like all these humans have worth and you may have to like ramp it up. I swear, once you get to your therapist's office, you can talk about for weeks, like how hard that was to find that person, you know, that's the type of thing you could, but like try, keep going. I mean, there's a BetterHelp is out there now. So, I mean, some of those may be a great place to start. I don't know the quality of therapist on BetterHelp. But I mean, isn't it kind of amazing that there's tons of commercials, Michael Phelps and a lot of people out there saying, I'm doing therapy. So
I love it.
To distill that down. Yeah. Yes, Pete Davidson. He's like,
God bless him.
Yes.
This is why he can just date any woman that he wants in the whole world. Because
he's authentic and honest.
He's like, guess what? There's a lot of stigma around saying that you have borderline because that's a sticky one.
Yes.
And what I love about him is that, and that we should probably address, is that it's really, really, really important that if you are diagnosed with a severe mental illness, and you should get checked out to make sure that you don't have one or that you do have one before you try regular talk therapy, because talk therapy does not treat severe mental illness. It does not treat borderline personality disorder or bipolar. It's probably going to be and I'm not a doctor, so don't, you know, you need to talk to a doctor, but it's probably going to be some combination of medication from your psychiatrist, which is a medical doctor. That's what psychiatrist is. I know it's kind of confusing all the different terms.
Yeah.
So you need to get a good psychiatrist too, and just make sure. And a good psychiatrist will say, maybe you don't need meds. Mine did. When I saw a psychiatrist, he said, if you don't need meds, we're not going to put you on them. Let's just see.
Yes.
It turns out I really did need the meds, and it was great for me, and probably saved my life. And so if you have, and I have, you know, so I have a severe mental illness. I have major depressive disorder. So, you know, that requires psychiatry. And my psychiatrist said, you also need to be in talk therapy. So that was amazing for me.
Yeah.
And, but with Pete Davidson, what I love about what he's doing is that he said in some interview, you know, I go to dialectical behavioral therapy twice a week, which is the only clinical proven treatment for borderline personality disorder. You cannot go see a talk therapist and recap your week and go, yeah, this was hard at work, da da da, and expect that your borderline personality disorder is going to get better, because it's not.
Yes.
You need to get the clinically proven treatment for what you have.
Yes. Absolutely. And really talking to therapists about their competencies, like ask them what they're, because a lot of times on Psychology Today, you just check like 100 boxes or whatever where you're being listed.
Oh, I've noticed that.
Yes. And it's like, look for a therapist that kind of specializes or ask them about that. What do you actually treat? And just don't be afraid to be a bit awkward or ask for, can we just talk a little bit
beforehand? You're interviewing them too. Yeah, yeah. You are interviewing them too.
Yep.
For me, like a big one when I started working with Pat was like I said, I really wanted a therapist who'd read certain books.
Yeah.
And so for me, it was really important that I found a therapist that had read the Alice Miller one, the drama of Gifted Child.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was really important to me that my therapist had read that. And so I asked her and she was like, absolutely. That's one of my foundational books. And so I was like, boom, we're in.
Yes.
Because I want to have that shared language.
Yes.
And it's like, if you don't know what trauma is, there's no way I can work with you.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Like, you have to know what trauma is. So what should therapy do?
It should, it's not going to necessarily make you feel better right away. For the first time in your life, you might be making space to look at all the things you've been masking or pushing aside. So it can feel a little disorienting initially. Ideally, you may even want to talk to a therapist about can you help me with that? Or, I mean, just don't be surprised if it feels a little, you know, it's the darkest before the dawn or whatever, all these phrases, you know, that it feels a little nuttier initially because you're just seeing stuff maybe for the first time.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So, you know, we know all about these grounding skills now, the DBT, the five senses, like use everything. There's not one prescription, you know? So I would be a little bit aware of people that are like, no, you're going to be better in this amount of time. I can get you better in this amount of time. Like therapists absolutely. With big agendas.
I thought I was like, you know, on my way, doing pretty good, da-da-da. Had a major meltdown out of nowhere yesterday. Big, 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 yes. big meltdown. So you just never know what's in there.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I'd say it again, that capacity piece. Ideally you're building your sense of self, you're building your sense of trust. Like IFS has these qualities of self and I can never name them all, but what we're looking for with my favorite one is curiosity. Calm, courage, creativity. Like those are the qualities that we possess. Ideally, somewhere in there that got knocked out by generations of trauma, just your experience. But it is possible to, I like this idea of like this, the calm, you know, every tornado does have an eye. So you're sort of looking, can I have these spaces while it's insane outside? You know, because nothing, you often can't change your external environment. Yeah, initially.
I mean, as an example, let's say I had the kind of I got triggered by something and it triggered some pretty big trauma for me. So I had like kind of a meltdown yesterday. And so I think like the me before therapy, which was a long time ago, but maybe I would have gone for some drugs or gone for a drink or distracted myself the trigger really made me want to blame people. Like it really made me go like, oh, you know what? My boyfriend is never there for me, which is not true. And I hate everyone. And even like this podcast is stupid. It made me want to reject everything and everyone. I need to stop doing this podcast. I need to break up with my boyfriend. You know what? I hate living in San Luis Obispo.
Yes.
And so instead of taking action on any of those things, which is what I would have done without therapy.
Yep.
I just went, you know what? I'm not qualified today to do anything. So why don't I just get curious, like you said, about what this is? What the fuck is this?
Yes. Yes.
And just ride it out.
Yes.
And gave myself that space, ended up having several hours of some pretty deep sobbing and crying, and then was able to reach out to you, Anne, and another friend that shares some similar trauma with me, and just be like, I had something really big came up for me today that I need to process. And at the end, hopefully that trauma is more integrated.
Yes.
So that the blaming and the running is happening less and less each
time. That's it. That's the capacity piece, you know, that where it doesn't feel, you don't have to leave yourself. You don't have to leave yourself and look way outside or look at everything in your life that's and make everything wrong, right? It's just like, what is this? And
what is this?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then hopefully the trigger just gets a little less and less. So I don't need to have that giant, giant, giant meltdown next time. Maybe I will. Who knows? But hopefully what's happening with the therapeutic process and in therapy, I got the tools to even have this meltdown in this way.
Yeah.
Is that it just gets less and less and less reactive, my nervous system, over time.
That's
so
right.
That I can dip in there and touch it, touch the pieces of the trauma and sit with it and have a cry little by little by little, instead of just terrorizing myself and the people around me, which is basically what
I talked about that one time, like it's the clean pain and dirty pain. And they talk about, Resman talks about that in equity work or just doing, white supremacy culture type or just those types of work is like, it's, you often will just, you feel something uncomfortable, unfamiliar. It feels gross. It feels bad. It probably is something from childhood. And you're just like, no way am I owning this. It must be you. It's all external. So we're teaching us to go internal and be like, what is this? And learn how to process the pain. Yes. And it's not who you are.
So I just want to talk a little bit about what might get in your way if this is the first time you're going to go see a therapist, or if it's the first time you want to find a therapist that's an even better fit for you.
Yeah.
I think one thing that comes up often is the feeling of discomfort in the body can be really hard.
Yeah.
So you like, especially if you've never had it modeled, like I had a friend say, like, I don't even know what to say when I call the therapist. What am I supposed to say? Mm-hmm. And so I just want to offer that. Yes, if you've never called a therapist to say, I need help, I need a therapist, this is feeling hard, that is going to feel really, really, really uncomfortable in your body because new things feel uncomfortable.
Yes. Yep.
But if you can, hopefully we've made the case that there's a lot of ease and beauty and everything on the other side. And therapists are going to, they're going to help you with that. They're going to be like, it's okay. You don't have to be
articulate. The more that you can tell the truth about what's happening for you in the moment, the better off you'll be. Like, this is terrifying to talk to you. You know, there's so much information right there. I know I need help. Like, just make it simple and say what's happening for you. You do not have to be like, you don't have to. And I want to work on this, this, and this. But if you can just say.
I feel like sometimes a barrier, though, is like it feels so ambiguous. Like for me, the way that my trauma shows up often is that I'm frozen. And so just going to your therapist and saying, I just think I feel numb all the time. And I don't understand why I'm so numb or why I'm so frozen or why I can't show up or why. So sometimes it's like, I often think like the giant verbal fights that I was getting in with one of my ex-boyfriends, that was easy to look at and say, this isn't healthy because you can see it.
Yeah.
But the numbing out, the watching TV every night, the drinking a couple drinks every night, that is harder to see and address because it's just like you're just coasting.
Yeah.
But coasting is a great reason to go to therapy.
I would say. What impact?
I'm sleepwalking through my life.
Sleepwalking, which we now know is probably some form of dissociation, which I know is a big term. And, you know, psychiatrists, psychologists might be like, stop throwing that term around, like stop throwing trauma around or whatever. But and I don't even want to get into the structural piece. But you also can reach out to therapists via text, via email. There's ways to do it that aren't so triggering to kind of see who's available, see what their responses are like.
Brings me to a really good point, though, because there are a lot of therapies that are like text therapy, which can be good for like emergencies. Mm-hmm. But I want to throw this out there because, I work in the science of trauma. And so I do know a lot about this, and we'll link to this in the show notes, but the still face experiment with that Edtronic did.
Yes.
We should get him on our podcast. I have his email. Where the mom needs to look into the baby's eyes and coo and ah, and oh, I'm so happy you're here, and hear those emotions.
Yes.
And for a lot of us with attachment trauma, of which Anne and I are definitely two of those people, and you probably are too, because it's really tough for parents to be there all the time.
Yes.
Every time that your baby needs you.
Yes.
That you need that therapist every week to look at you and mirror your emotions and care about you to rewire those that attachment stuff that went wrong in your brain. So just the text therapy or the really quick is good for an emergency.
Yes.
But long term, you need to show up and have someone look you in the eyes every week for a long time to heal those attachment wounds.
Yes. Yes. Probably forever for some of us. But you but I think you do, you start, again, that capacity building, the therapy is about then, now I got enough confidence to develop my goddess group, you know, like this group of women I've been meeting with for 12 years. So I have these other pockets, like you start to the, it's not just you and a therapist to the end of your life, you know, ideally you're starting to move out into your world and connect with groups and those types of things. Yeah.
Oh, that reminds me that it's so important to talk about budget when it comes to therapy. That's a huge barrier.
Yes.
But if you don't have it in your budget, Al-Anon groups and adult children of alcoholics groups are free and so, so, so good if you get the right group. Avoid the groups with like toxic dominant people. And if you find a good healing group, those can be so healing and free.
Yes.
But most insurance, you know, there, you'll find a therapist eventually that takes your insurance if you look. But I just want to say, like, if you do have the means to pay for an expensive therapist, I would say it's totally worth the money. But there's free options out there. There's community health clinics. Like, I used to go to the Boston Area Rape Crisis Center. That was completely free. So Anne's going to take off. See ya, Anne.
Bye, everybody. I got to go.
And so making sure that you have some free resources. So I, you know, to help heal my sexual trauma, there's always some sort of rape or sexual assault crisis center in almost every town or city that you can find and get free therapy. And that can be, like, I think that unfortunately some of the languaging can be off-putting because it's like, well, it didn't just happen yesterday, so is it really a crisis? So you can go to these crisis centers even if you're, so, you know, crisis happened when you were 5 or 3 or 16. They're for everybody. And there's other, you know, community counseling centers in a lot of cities and towns, and you can kind of Google these and where you can find access to free therapy or therapists in training. Like I mentioned before, San Luis Obispo Drug and Alcohol Center had an amazing therapist and amazing counselors of their programs that helped me heal so much. And that was free. That was completely free. So there are, you know, for every budget, there should be someone for you. Just in case that's a barrier, like, well, I just don't have the money for a therapist. You know, I think it's also just like a really good investment. I mean, a lot of therapists offer sliding scale. So, you know, for certain people who have a good job and insurance, it's one price, but they could take a couple lower income. You know, when I was seeing Susan in Asheville, I did have insurance, but it was still a $30 copay. And so I just asked my mom at the time, and I realized not everyone has that privilege, but I just asked my mom, would you pay the copay every week? Cause I didn't make that much money. So my mom would just give me, you know, $120 every month for me to go to therapy every week. So there's ways, you know, usually if you can find one covered by insurance, and now with, you know, the Affordable Care Act, you know, it's pretty easy to get insurance. I know it may not give you access to every therapist, but even just going and talking every week to someone is going to help. So, you know, I don't think we were able to cover like everything, but we're going to link to different resources and things in the show notes. Feel free, you know, go to our website, latchkeyurchins.com, and fill out our contact form or email us, latchkeyurchins@gmail.com. If you have questions, because we want to help connect you with the resources, like, hey, I'm having trouble with this, this, and this, or how do I find a therapist, or I'm running into this thing. Like, let us know. We'll respond if we can. We just think it's really important to get that kind of healing. So let us know how we can help, and good luck.